programs that we're doing. So I get to talk for like half an hour. So so sit back and enjoy yourselves. So the first program is going to be called the Navigation Program. I'll try to put both of them into a larger context and sort of explain the pluses and minuses of them as I go through. So I have no relationships to disclose. Some background information, as many of you might know, that you know, increasing HIV care retention is an important prevention goal. The National HIV-AIDS Strategy says by 2015 we should have about 80% of HIV-infected persons in adequate care. Re-engagement is important for maintaining people's adherence to medication, also reducing viral load, which reduces forward transmission of the disease. You know, multiple barriers have been identified, things such as stigma, homelessness, housing insecurity, substance use, as barriers to why people can't get adequate care. So innovative techniques for re-engaging this population are really needed. So we came up with something we're calling the Navigation Program, which is basically using patient navigation, something that was developed sort of as grounded theory through cancer research and making sure people who had could get to their medical appointments effectively would be effective for re-engaging infected persons back into medical care who had fallen out of care. This is part of a larger project. We received funding from an organization called CHRP, the California HIV/AIDS Research Program, several years ago to look along the continuum of care in Los Angeles County for our HIV-infected residents to see if we could develop county programming to beef up all of the numbers from testing all the way, prevention to testing all the way through to retention and care. Part of this project, we also have a PrEP demonstration project going on. It's a little not ready for prime time, so we don't have any results from that to show. But the two programs I am going to talk about are up there, Project Engage and Navigation, and both of them are specifically geared towards helping to identify individuals who know they're infected, who have fallen out of care, and trying different methods of re-engaging them in care. So that's what both of these presentations are. I'm actually going to talk about two types of navigation programs we've done. We did a smaller pilot project with AIDS Project Los Angeles, one of our community-based organizations, so we could sort of pilot test some of navigation out. And then after that, we took some of the best practices and incorporated that into the navigation program that we're currently doing that's funded by CHRP. So what we're calling the CIFNAV or the APLA NAV. It was a smaller pilot. It was less evaluated. The same goals and objectives for both navigation programs exist. And that study is partially funded through a multi-site grant through Johns Hopkins. Our CHRP one is intended to incorporate the best practices from the sort of smaller pilot we're doing, expand some of the evaluation tools for that, and it's obviously going to start after the CIFNAV program has already sort of done its course so we can get best practices out of it. So the goal for both of these projects is to find and re-engage these individuals back into care, and we've also developed a re-engagement intervention to do that. The design is to basically comb the medical records of publicly funded HIV clinics to identify people who have fallen out of care. And then the main objectives are sort of evaluate whether the strategy of finding these individuals is effective, whether the intervention that we've tried is effective, whether patient navigators are effective, and what's the overall cost effectiveness of such an intervention. Since, you know, we are the Department of Public Health and we do use, you know, public money, we need to make sure that the programs that we implement, you know, actually save money in the long run. Eligibility for both programs is the same. It's, you know, adult HIV-infected residents who we determine to be out of care. We use our HIV surveillance database to determine eligibility. We initially started with our sort of out-of-care designation with the HRSA definition, which is, you know, two visits within a 12-month period, at least 3 months apart, where you have a viral load and a CD4 conducted. We found that to be a little too restrictive for what we were looking at, because if you look on surveillance, there are many people who fit the HRSA definition, but their last two medical visits while they were incarcerated. So we did not consider someone who was incarcerated 2 to 4 times in the last 12 months, where they had viral loads and CD4s conducted, not really consistent medical care, because they would have to become reincarcerated to see the doctor again. That's not a very consistent way of doing medical care. So we expanded our eligibility criteria to incorporate other individuals or people who might have what we're calling inconsistent care. We had to identify patients, as I said, we looked at clinic medical records and used our HIV surveillance system. To locate individuals, we used a series of public health investigator techniques, which we actively used to find individuals who were affected with syphilis and gonorrhea in LA County, using public health databases and public health records to find addresses and phone numbers, call people several times, send letters to their home, send out navigators to persons' home to actually find them and try to bring them back into care. And then we had our re-engagement sort of intervention. For the SIFNAV one, we modified an ARTIS intervention. ARTIS is an intervention that was originally developed for newly infected people to link them to care. We modified it for individuals who aren't treatment naive, so to see if we could sort of expand that and use the same strength-based case management techniques in ARTIS to re-engage people in care. And then for the PATHNAV project, we actually developed a three-tiered intervention strategy that was a little more client-centered, and I'll get to that in a second. So these are some lessons learned from that less evaluated, smaller pilot project. This is actually, I think, a very good take-home message. We looked at about 1,400 patient records. These were all people that the clinic said were actually out of care. When we looked in surveillance, we found 35% of these individuals were actually in care somewhere else, and they had just not told the doctor at their old facility that they had moved on for whatever reason. We find that using surveillance in this method can actually save a lot of time and resources because clinics spend a lot of time trying to hunt down people who don't actually fit the criteria of being out of care. So it's resource sort of wasteful. We did find a certain percentage who were deceased, who had moved out of the county. And there was still about 30%, 22, and then 12, about 34%. People who we had wrong numbers, we still couldn't find them, even with all of our expanded location techniques. But among the 8% who we did enroll or contact, there was very high acceptability of the program. Very few people actually refused to be enrolled. Our effective techniques for finding people were primarily still clinic medical records, followed by our HIV surveillance and then Ryan White databases. Average age was about 42. A high proportion of people in this were Hispanic. Most people were male or identified as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. If you look at some social determinants at baseline, a high proportion didn't have any insurance, low education, certain proportion unemployment, low amounts of homelessness. That's something to watch for the next presentation. And a large proportion of the people actually were virally suppressed when we found them. These individuals had been infected for about 10 years, and they had actually been out of care for over 2 years when we re-engaged with them. So they had not seen the doctor in quite a while. When we asked people why they weren't able to get to the doctor, the majority said it was because they had other life priorities, childcare, families. They just couldn't get there. A lower proportion said they lacked the money, which is something that they shouldn't, because HIV-infected persons, regardless of insurance status or immigration status, can receive free medical care in the county of Los Angeles through our publicly funded clinics. So that's sort of a lack of information about what's available. And then people had transportation issues, and there was substance use and stigma as well. Some sort of program indicators. It took about 5 intervention visits to link these individuals back to care. We did actually were able to engage about 85% of them were actually linked to care. And when we mean linked, we mean they attended at least one medical appointment. And then retained in care of those who've been enrolled for 6 months, we still have fairly high retention rates. So these individuals did go back on their own about 6 months later to see the doctor, which is, very positive. And we worked very strongly with the clinic to make sure that this was an appropriate place they wanted to go. So the lessons learned is that supplementing clinic locator information with surveillance data can be very effective at targeting your specific population. But a one-size-fits-all intervention strategy may not be as effective. We want to expand retention efforts to bring those retention numbers up. So our next step was to take the best practices from this and incorporate it into our navigation program sponsored by CHRP, which is what we did. This is sort of an overall schematic. I'm not going to bore you. It looks like stereo instructions in a third language. But I'm just going to say that the thing to watch out for, the structure is pretty much the same, except on the left, you'll notice that we have 3-tiered intervention strategies to implement. And we have at the bottom here something called a transitional retention piece that we added to make sure these people maintain in care and maintain a relationship with their home clinic. This navigation program is currently actively enrolling participants. We've only been up for a few months now. We've screened almost as many people as it took the other program to do a little over a year for in about 3 months, three, 4 months, which is good. We've identified about 490 potentially eligible participants. We have found that some of them are currently incarcerated. We've had a few people decline, and we've enrolled 42 at this point. What we do is we sort of look at people by how long they've been out of care and what their last known viral load, how elevated it was, and that's how we determine who we're going to go after first, because patient navigation is resource intensive, and it, you know, you have to sort of pick and choose your battles. Again, we had a similar proportion who were actually in care elsewhere, and we were able to go back and report that to the home clinic so they could sort of take that person off their books. We do fee for performance in Los Angeles County now, so a clinic that is able to say that person is no longer a patient as opposed to that person is lost to us is very good in clinics like that. We're still finding a large proportion that we potentially eligible and we haven't been able to find them, or we're actively trying to look for them right now. About the same age of persons enrolled, this population is more heavily Hispanic and Caucasian than the last SIFNAV was. Mostly male, again, and mostly people who identify as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. About half are uninsured, but some do report they do have private insurance, and they're still not going to the doctor. Most MSM, there is some substance use and some lifetime history of incarceration, sex work, and homelessness, but the rates are fairly low. Those might go up. This is all very preliminary at this point. We created a three-tiered intervention strategy for this intervention. The first one is we found in the first navigation program that ARTIST was sort of this thing that you threw onto people. It was 10 sessions, and it was a little much. And some people were like, I just want to go to the doctor. Can't you just take me there tomorrow? And so we created this to accommodate that. So we have a screener, and the navigator actually evaluates which intervention they want to enroll a person in based on their need. So direct linkage to care means the person says they want to go to the doctor, and we just take them. The next one is we did create a one-session motivational interviewing intervention that focused on people's ambivalence about why they might or might not want to go to care. And for persons who seem like they had numerous barriers or concerns about going to care, we did use the modified ARTIST intervention that we had developed for the first navigation program. And this is an automatic tiered system, so if somebody says they want to be directly linked to care and we go to the doctor the next day and they don't show up, they're automatically enrolled into motivational interviewing because the next time the navigator sees them, the conversation is, what happened? And they're automatically enrolled in the next tier of the intervention. If you look at some intervention components, you'll see that at baseline, 11 people were enrolled in direct linkage, but currently there's only 9, which means 2 of those individuals' intensity of intervention was ramped up automatically because they weren't able to engage in care. We're finding about 50% of the people are actually having to be ramped up their intensity of intervention through this process, which means we may need to retool our screening tool a little bit just to try to really get at the most effective intervention for the person. Again, same proportion of persons with baseline suppressed viral load. Took about 20 days to link these individuals to care, about an hour and a half of staff time. This linkage defined here is 2 visits, 1 medical, 1 case management. So we have about half the population have been fully linked, which means they've had both of those, and about 9 people have had 1 appointment, but the other one hasn't been scheduled yet, so they haven't actually attended it. And then we ask people a series of barriers to what's keeping them out of medical care. I think we cover about 20 or 25. And these are the top 5. So of the, you know, it's not surprising most people said they needed HIV medical care, but also people reported needing dental and mental health services and other social services as well. And then when we asked them why they weren't able to get the service, they gave us a series of sort of barriers to care. Individual barriers are things like I was drinking or using drugs, or I didn't know it was available to me, or I didn't know where to go, or I was too sick to go, or something like that. Organizational barriers are things like the people there were rude to me and I never want to go back, or a structural barrier is the system's too confusing, or I have concerns over immigration, I don't want to go there for whatever reason. And there are some barriers that we're not able to sort of categorize. So there are some limitations to this project. We have limited ability to effectively compare these different strategies together because the enrollment numbers are fairly small. Lots of non-parametric statistics are in my future. Data collection is still ongoing, so we these numbers are probably going to change. They're definitely going to change. There's a high proportion of individuals we still can't find, even with expanded location techniques. So it's not a panacea. It's a tool. And it's still a resource-intensive intervention, so we're really going to have to wait to get its full utility until we can do a cost-effectiveness analysis of it. You know, it's key to get buy-in of the facilities themselves. We found some facilities are easier to work with than others. I'm sure that's not a surprise to anyone in the audience. Use of surveillance can be very effective at actually targeting your population that you need to find and not wasting your resources on people who don't fit your eligibility criteria because you don't know it. And a tiered intervention seems to be more client-centered, so we want to stick with that. But it's still labor-intensive, takes staff time and resources to find these individuals and sit with them while you navigate them back to care.